flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
How do you feel about the Bears continuing to build their coaching staff with special attention to the offensive line? Our guy Brad Biggs, Biggs Time 7 a.m. this morning, reported that OSU O-line coach Justin Fry interviewed yesterday, and Tulane coach Dan Rauscher, who had a 10-year run in New Orleans, is also going to be talked to. They've also just hired former Jaguars head coach Press Taylor. Your thoughts on the Bears staff coming even into more focus?
Yeah, he was the Jags offensive coordinator, I believe, and the brother of Zach Taylor, as David just mentioned in the last segment. That's great that they're filling out the group and keeping at it. To me, the offensive line hire is huge. I don't know Justin Fry. I don't know enough to, they seem like they have a pretty damn good offensive line at Ohio State. So I am very interested in it. That's one of the most important jobs in the NFL, having a good offensive line coach, especially at a place like the Bears, where, you know, you've got a lot of uncertainty in some of those positions, and you need someone that can come in and teach the position. That's a big teaching job, and you've got to be able to, if you want to develop players, if you want Kieran Amagaji to get better, you better have a really good coach that can give him drills and conversations and thoughts and really hands-on. That's the thing, you know, these offensive line guru guys, it's extraordinary to be in a room with them because they start moving around furniture while they're showing you different ways of blocking and different things that you can do. I remember back in the day, a guy running to show footage of sumo wrestlers and the way that they control their bodies. And I mean, it's just there's so much that goes into that particular group that you need a real technician. You need someone that understands it. And I think that, you know, whoever they hire, let's hope it's the best guy at that, because that's crucial to what they're doing.
Crucial, Mully, is a great way to put it. You and I, for a long time on this show, have talked about the Bears' offensive line. Sometimes it was good conversations. Sometimes it was bad conversations. There's also a report out there of Nate Tice saying that the Bears are interested in talking to the Notre Dame offensive line coach, Joe Rudolph. And the Bears and Notre Dame offensive line has had some symmetry in the past. The Bears have poached there before and had some great results. We hear Olin Krutz talking about his favorite offensive line coach that came from the Irish back in the day. So this is a big hire, and I am waiting to see who they pick, just like the rest of us.
You're seeing them go to the college game for an offensive line position, or at least interviewing guys. Now, I know Rashard has NFL experience, but it's very interesting because I do think you can talk to certain people in the profession and they say that is what you're going to see more of. There's more similarities in the two in offensive football in college and the NFL than there ever has been. The transition is just as easy, and you need somebody who's going to be maybe a little bit reinvigorating for a staff, for a roster, for a position group. I really like the idea of Dan Rochard. Is a lifer. He's coached a lot of different spots. We'd mentioned him, Illinois, Northern Illinois, even Ball State. So this is a guy that's been well-traveled, both college and pro. And Justin Fry is interesting. He's 41 years old. He fits more of the profile of this young staff coming together, and you could see them appealing to players in that way with a lot of energy and ideas and kind of a new way, a new approach. He's, as you might not be surprised, he's from a small town in Indiana, so I am a fan of Justin Fry. He played 5 years for the Indiana Hoosiers, 45 straight starts, and then he started his coaching career. So I would be all in favor of this guy. He would be a good
addition. You said the magic words in there, so I can understand.
I know. Anyway, the Press Taylor edition is interesting. I think they're stockpiling as much football intellect as they can, and you get somebody like Press Taylor in the room with Declan Doyle and with Ben Johnson, and you got all kinds of ideas flying around. So yeah, this staff is coming together quite nicely.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs, he's here at 7 a.m. Ryan Poles made his way down to Mobile, Alabama on Wednesday for the Senior Bowl. Do you think this was time well spent, and how different do you think this year's Senior Bowl observations will be for Poles?
He's got a process. He's got to have a process to be in the job that he's in. So there's probably nothing different about that. He probably has a routine. These guys have routines about where they go and where they stay and who they mingle with and how they evaluate talent, all those things. But I do wonder what's different about this for Ryan Poles this time around. Is he looking for certain types of traits in certain types of offensive linemen or defensive linemen or tight ends or whatever the case may be, a running back that goes downhill? What are the kinds of things after his initial exposure to Ben Johnson's ideal football player is Ryan Poles looking for, and how does that different than what he might have been looking for in the past? Probably very similar, probably very, very much the same type of approach, but this is a different offseason for Ryan Poles. We talked yesterday, he was not necessarily demoted, but his power was diminished. And when you go into now these kind of settings, I think you look for things that don't necessarily fit your ideal left tackle or your ideal center or running back, but something that your head coach and your partner, Ben Johnson, will want and like as well. So I do think it's slightly different, but I don't think it's dramatic enough to where he's going to be an entirely different guy or his personality be any different.
Well, I'm glad he's down there. I'm glad to know that Ian Cunningham is down there, that he's preparing to be the assistant general manager for the 25 season and not preparing to be the general manager of another team when the 26 hiring process gets underway. That was being sarcastic, just in case. I hope he has a different thought process on offensive linemen. He's not done well evaluating offensive linemen. So, but I also am concerned. Where's Ben Johnson? Shouldn't Ben Johnson be there also? If we're to believe that he's going to be in lockstep, joined at the hip, and maybe even the final decision maker, shouldn't he be there?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
Because he is putting together a staff, and it's more important. That's the most important thing right now. Dustin, I think that they didn't hire him, even with the power he has. And this is how it's done in the NFL, is that he will get every report and every player, and they will come down and they will look at tape, and then he will talk about what he likes or doesn't like about the guy and quiz around about it. He's not a scout. He's not down there to look at rank and file players, if I may use David's term. He's there to make the call on the big decisions. Like, for instance, if he tells you, I need a generational talent at running back, and you're like, no, we need to get an offensive lineman in here. And he says, and I'm not sure this, I'm just using an imaginary conversation, I need Genty. Get Ashton Genty. That would be more of the kind of thing you're talking about. What to do with the first round pick?
So he'll go to the pro day. He'll have a personal workout,
and he'll be the guy that can break down tape and look at things. This is for the later round scouts. This is for the guys that are in the weeds with every player in the draft. No coach does that. You know, with Belichick, it used to be they would give him three names they were looking at, and Bill would tell them, I like this guy more than these guys, that kind of thing. It's not, everyone has a job to do, and this guy has to get a staff together to run an NFL.
That's it. I mean, he's still dealing with staff issues, who's coming, who's going, the last couple spots in his staff. He lost two guys yesterday that were maybe not going to stay on Dennis Allen's staff, but Borgonzi and Andre Curtis went to Dallas with Flusie.
Right. That's right. It's a good example of it.
That's a great question.
All right, speaking of that, David, with the Bears losing the linebacker coach, Dave Borgonzi, safeties coach, Andre Curtis, to the Cowboys, how about them Cowboys? Do you think that the big loss to the defensive staff, or did it make sense that they'll go work for Matt Eberflus? And what do you make of the Bears still waiting to hire their offensive line coach? We talked about that a minute ago.
That line coach is a big deal, so they got to get to that, and they got to figure out who it is, and they, let's hope they're choosing amongst the best people. As far as losing coaches from a staff, I think that's completely accepted, and they have allowed them to go. It's their decision as much as those guys' decision. I'm glad people are getting jobs. I really am. I think Dave Borgonzi's done a really good job. Andre Curtis, they went through a lot of safeties this year, and I believe he's got a title of passing game coordinator in the defense, so that's good. It's good that Eberflus has people that he can trust. I think Dennis Allen's been around long enough that he knows exactly what kind of coach he's looking at, and he probably has guys he knows that would be available to him. So I think that I'm not as concerned with the hiring of defensive coaches as I am with the hiring of the offensive coaches, because this is the head coach running an offense and putting a group around him that he feels is going to be like a creative group. They requested with Washington to bring in David Blau. I thought that was really interesting because Blau bounced around. And, I don't know if he's still in the mix because they hired a passing game coordinator, but he's an assistant quarterback's coach. He was in the room with, in 2023, he was in the room with Johnson in Detroit. He was I think he was on the practice squad.
And he was on the field in 2019 when he made his debut against the Bears.
Yeah, that's true. I think he's 0-8 as a starter, David. Not to get too worked up about it. But I'm just saying, that's a guy that the coach knows that's been around. Maybe he wants around.
Purdue guy.
I don't know. Yeah, Purdue, a long time Purdue guy. He was a starter of Purdue and then wound up getting a cup of coffee, bounced around a bunch of journeyman guys.
Recruited to Purdue by John Shoup.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great connection they must have already made.
Well, I'm glad that these defensive guys are not coming back. I don't understand why anybody is back. If as bad as we have all heard and know things were up at Halas Hall over the last couple of years, why is Hightower back? Am I the only one that's like, why have they retained Hightower? What happened to Darren Rizzi? I mean, you know, did George McCaskey not want to pay the plumber? Where is Darren Rizzi these days? Still unemployed? Still looking? Hightower, does he count as the all-star studded staff that the ESPN Bigfoot reported that they were putting together here in Chicago? Listen, anybody associated with last year's team from a coaching standpoint can get out.
I understand why you'd say that, because they did lose 10 games in a row. In the last 3 years, they did lose a lot of football games, which to me raises more questions about what the heck the Cowboys are doing in Dallas by having Matt Eberflus added to their staff as a defensive coordinator. Yes, he has done that well, but they allow him to bring a couple assistants off a staff that has lost 10 games and lost control of its team in Chicago. Do they know that down in Dallas? How about them Cowboys? So they are taking the Bears' assistant coaches off their hands, so to speak. Hightower, I believe some guys are just NFL lifers, and they're always going to get the benefit of the doubt, and he's one of those guys that in every staff you need a transition guy who probably can relate to as many players as possible. And what is he like? What's he really like? And I think Richard Hightower deals with a lot of different guys on both sides of the ball. Maybe that's why. I don't want to explain it for him, but I am kind of surprised he is back, especially after they talked to Darren Rizzi and had some other options. But I look at Borgonzi and Curtis going, and I do think it's good in a way, because if you weren't going to retain some of these assistant coaches on defense that were more proven than these guys, you weren't going to keep these guys. So thanks for the memories, guys.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
And I appreciate your question.
We've talked about the DCs in the Super Bowl as among the best in the NFL. Which one has the harder job in the big game, KT's Steve Spagnuolo or the Eagles' Vic Fangio? If you take Bill Belichick approach, try to take one player out of the game, who is it for each team?
That's a really interesting question. I think those are two different questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there have to be, if you had to take one player out of the game for each team, it's easy and obvious. It's Mahomes and Saquon Barkley, because I do think that the drop-offs are dramatic. And Saquon Barkley can turn a 7-yard gain into a 47-yard touchdown in a minute. Not even a minute, in a flash.
Yeah.
Run to daylight. And Patrick Mahomes can turn a collapsed pocket into a first down and keep the chains moving. So I do think that, to me, that's the obvious answer from either the grizzled veteran football observer or the casual sports fan. So that's the answer to that question. As far as what's more difficult for the defensive coordinator, this is something you could have an entire show built around.
Right.
Because I think that there's no wrong answer. But if I were to pick one, I think it's going to be harder for Steve Spagnuolo to stop and come up with ways to commit to the Eagles' running game that everything in football starts with that premise. Stop the run. Run the football, stop the run. Then it will be for Vic Fangio to come up with ways to take away the perimeter passing game with the Chiefs, make them one-dimensional. I don't really think the Chiefs' receivers, Xavier Worthy is a game-breaker, but I do think Vic Fangio is easier to find ways to combat their passing game than it will be for Spagnuolo to combat the Eagles' running game. That may look silly in retrospect, but right now that's the way I would answer it a week and a half away from kickoff.
Yeah, we're still a week and a half away from kickoff, no doubt about that. It might be as simple as whichever tight end has the better day on Sunday, Dallas Goedert or Travis Kelce, that might be the difference maker. I don't know, David, and you're right. I mean, you got to stop Saquon Barkley. I don't know if that can be done. So sometimes I think there's also some coaches that say, okay, we're going to let him get his, but now we got to take out the second option. We got to stop the next best thing. And I think that's for the Eagles, it's Goedert. I think the Chiefs are good enough in the back end of their defense. They can go one-on-one with the wide receivers of the Eagles. Spagnuolo is the only guy, the only coordinator to ever win four Super Bowls as a coordinator. Two with the Giants, two with the Chiefs. Obviously, he could become the only one with five if the Chiefs were to get three in a row. Not sure exactly if we have to watch out how we say things about three championships in a row. Anyway, but I mean, the obvious answer, Fangio's got the toughest job. We talked about it.
He doesn't
yesterday.
Want to say 3-peat because it means money in the pocket of Pat Riley.
Pat Riley's listening?
Maybe somebody is.
Yeah, I don't think it's.
He doesn't need any more hair gel.
He's going to need more hair if Jimmy stays there. I find this a fascinating idea because I think that I agree with you, David, that Spags probably has the harder job because the Eagles have the better running back quarterback combination, right? But I think, like, number one, I don't think you can take Patrick Mahomes out of the game. I think the guy that every defensive coordinator tries to take out of the game is Travis Kelce because of what you said about the limited number of weapons that they have in Kansas City. I think if you had to pick one player in the game that is the most difficult to take out of the game, it probably is Mahomes because he is multidimensional. And Hurts, you know, he can throw and he can run, but he's also half injured all the time, and he doesn't throw as well as Mahomes does. So I think that
he's half injured all the time.
Well, he seems like it, doesn't he? He's got like a knee or an ankle or whatever it might be. I really think that it is the most difficult thing to do is to try to stop Mahomes because, as we saw last week, he can run. And that he hadn't used that most of the year, and all of a sudden he does. I think with Saquon Barkley, the extraordinary thing was that touchdown run, the first touch of the game, right? I mean, he ends up with, what, 123 yards? He gets half of it on that play. And he also is stopped on that play, and he spins, and then he hits daylight, and it's extraordinary to watch. So you could do he scored two touchdowns in every playoff game. I think that was one of the great signings. If they win the Super Bowl, that has to go down as maybe the best signing maybe in league history, a guy that can take you to a Super Bowl.
There's only two others. I think if it's Saquon Barkley, Tom Brady, Reggie White.
Yeah.
Those are the three best free agent signings of all time, and you can debate which one means more or meant more.
But Tom was like more of a shortened. What I'm saying is, if Saquon Barkley, if he literally lasts 3 years, you know, if you draft a running back, the reality is, if you get six good years out of the guy, you've hit a home run. That's where we're at with running backs in the NFL these days. And if you get a generational talent, but Barkley has taken a team to the Super Bowl. He scored two touchdowns in every game. He got 2,000 yards rushing. This is like one of the great moments in the league where you go get a guy and then you ride him to glory. It's extraordinary. And I know this team was there 2 years ago, but the reason they're there now is because this guy's made them He brought something completely different that they didn't have, frankly. So I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. But in terms of just one player, one game, I think the multiple dimensions of Mahomes make him the hardest guy to stop.
It's the right question, and I'm not sure yet.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver floated this about shortening the game on the Dan Patrick Show from 12-minute quarters to 10-minute quarters.
Something else that I'm a fan of, and I'm probably in a minority, as we get more involved in global basketball, the NBA is the only league that plays 48 minutes. And I am a fan of four 10-minute quarters. I'm not sure that many others are. I mean, putting aside what it means for records and things like that, you know, I think that a two-hour format for a game is more consistent with sort of modern television habits.
Your reaction to what you heard there from Adam Silver on the Dan Patrick Show?
Yeah, I like Adam Silver. I think he's a bright guy. I think he always he's careful about what he says. I don't think he just throws that out there. And, you know, it's funny because there were two stories yesterday that caught your attention. There was a big story about Belichick saying that the Lombardi Trophy should be the Brady Trophy. That was a throwaway line on two guys having a conversation.
It was a good thought, though.
It's good stuff, and we got to get to it at some point. But what I'm saying is Adam Silver, this is a planned thing. This is Adam Silver thinking things through and trying to figure out, as he has been doing, how to motivate players, how to get the most out of the league. How do you get, you know, I got a new in-season basketball tournament to try to get players to play more and care more earlier in the year. This is along those lines. This is about improvement of the game, and this is about not losing revenue, number one. You don't want to cut back on games because you got more places than ever to show them, and you got more people interested to, just in terms of the television reality of it. All these apps are running around waving money at you, and so you don't want to do that. But maybe if we shorten the game, maybe that'll help, that kind of thing. I think this was much more thought through and planned than Bill kind of mentioning Tom Brady and how important players are.
The average salary in the NBA is almost $12 million a year, and Adam Silver is worried about motivating people to work 48 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, that just everything you need to know about the NBA and the problem it is right now.
But you're wrong. You're wrong, because that's not what this is about. This is not about getting players necessarily motivated to avoid load management as much as it is to spark some more interest in a fan base that is lagging. Look at television ratings this year, down 20%. This is something that is built in and intended to address this. This was an intriguing idea. It also was an intentional idea.
Yes, totally.
So there's no accident that Adam Silver went on the Dan Patrick Show and floated this out there. When you do the math, you realize eight fewer minutes per game over the course of an 82-game schedule. They're essentially eliminating 13 games worth of minutes.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. And you would avoid load management. You would get guys, you might reduce injuries. And you know what? Who is really going to miss? I'm sorry. Who's going to miss the way that it takes 20 minutes to play the last 2.5 minutes of any NBA game? Nobody.
There is a group of people that feel the NBA is boring because all that matters is the last 2 minutes of the game.
Yes, thank you. And I'm one of those people right now, because you get fed up with watching the second quarter and what really takes so long. And then now they have the replay and the review, and the whole process is like, get on with it. I'm with Adam Silver. I like this idea. I don't think that we'd complain about the pitch clock ruining baseball anymore. You have some legitimate concerns about injuries. Let's study that. Let's look at that. But no, I'm good with this.
I don't know if that answered the question.
It did not. Did we get any closer to figuring out the Bulls after Wednesday night loss in Boston? How much did the Bulls miss Zach LaVine? And how surprised were you that Coby White played against the Celtics?
Well, I'm clearly the wrong person to turn to for Bulls insight after blowing my money and betting on them to be able to cover, and they were that big number, 14.5 point underdogs, and they still get blown out. Porzingis hitting shots from the logo. The Celtics, again, it bears repeating because it's such a fascinating number. 8 times they have now beaten opponents by 20 or more points after games that they have lost. I would not want to play the Celtics after a defeat. The Bulls found out the hard way. Vooch not even in double figures. Lonzo Ball not even double figures. They missed Zach, but those guys did not show up, and neither did the rest of the team.
Well, maybe if the game had been 40 minutes, the Bulls would have covered. Just maybe.
No chance. I gotta say, you know, that was That was a life lesson yesterday. You know, he who gambles lives in shambles. That was a typical knee jerk kind of reaction.
It was.
And knee isn't the key word there.
Thank you.
No, I'm joking.
It was definitely a jerky move.
It's just guilty. To come in the next day and know that statistic and not know it before the wager is made is why you shouldn't gamble. Gambling is really hard, and they're putting those numbers down for a reason. A lot of time, they're trying to goad you into making a wager. I don't know. I couldn't believe that you did that as abruptly as you did mid-show. It's just so unlike you. I think it's an important life lesson because, you know, first of all, the Celtics are seriously better than the Bulls. Secondly, as we learned in the aftermath, with the great history of the Celtics and the fact that they set a record, that tells you that every time they lose a game, they sit up and take notice and they play completely differently the next time out. Whereas, you know, you kind of look at it from a distance like, oh, they're not playing well right now. You can jump on this action. It's just, it speaks volumes. I'm very happy that happened. I'm not offering you even half of the 20, but I think it was an important thing that we taught people.
Lesson learned.
Yes.
Lesson learned.
It's a good lesson.
Yeah.
And it really was important to be able to know that.
Yeah, I know. Tough night.
Thank you for that, Mr. David. Yeah. We all appreciate it.
I'll take one.
All right.